You need to call. If you like this program, you need to call. 713-526-5738.
Go to your phone right now. Become part of creating a future and not just letting it wash over you. Back next week. Till then, take care and have fun.
Not-for-profit media for social and economic justice. Online at houston.indymedia.org.
Hey, Houston, thanks as always for kicking off your weekend with us here at the Houston Indie Media Show. As I'm sure all of our listeners are well aware, we are in pledge drive. Last week, I made the mistake of saying that we had raised $70. We actually raised only $25. We are extremely grateful for that $25 pledge from an opt-out parent, as we have been giving a lot of coverage to the grassroots movement against high-stakes standardized testing, in that they are not a true measure of what all of our children know, and nor are they a measure of what all of our teachers do or have taught throughout the school year. And I'm talking both affectively as well as academically. If you would like to keep shows like us on the air, please, we beg you to call 713-526-5738. That's 713-526-KPFT. And one of the other things, during our broadcast last week, our Bob Schaefer with the FairTest.org organization said that on Twitter it came out that that very heavy-handed, not short of saying, I think it is completely fair to say, bullying letter to parents who were opting out their children from high-stakes standardized testing in Houston ISD that was sent out by Dan Gohl. That letter, since our broadcast, was in fact retracted, and allegedly the bold print and very heavy-handed verbiage was accredited, according to official spokespeople with that district, to editing errors. I don't know how you feel about that, but I did want to update everybody on that. Now, before we really delve in deep to what's going on in Baltimore, as beyond what the corporate media has been showing you this week, of course, it is May 1st. And John, why don't you go ahead and share a little bit about May Day?
Yeah, May Day. You know, too often we hear about holidays, we hear about celebrations, and we don't really know the context of those holidays. We don't know the origins of those holidays and maybe the significance of those holidays. I think, before we talk just a couple of minutes about what May Day is, maybe the history of it, I think it's very significant that on this May Day this year, what we're seeing around the country over the issue of police brutality, how on this May Day we're seeing thousands of people engaged in struggle against police brutality. We're seeing demonstrations all over the country today. There was a massive demonstration, which we'll hear more about, in Baltimore today. As we speak, there is a demonstration and a gathering at McGregor Park of local folks here. Our friends are addressing that issue as well and expressing solidarity with what's going on in the struggle in Baltimore and everywhere else. So on this May Day, I think looking back, and what we can see is that the idea of May Day was part of a struggle for the 8-hour day, part of the struggle for better working conditions. One of the first proclamations that was printed before May Day 1886, to give you an idea, I guess, as to the historical context of what is now May Day, people were putting out calls like working men to arms, war to the palace, peace to the cottage, and death to the luxurious idleness. The wage system is the only cause of the world's misery. It is supported by the rich classes, and to destroy it, they must be either made to work or die. 1 pound of dynamite is more than a bushel of ballots. Make your demand for 8 hours with weapons in your hands. Meet the capitalist bloodhounds, police, and militia in proper manner. Now, I say this in a historical context, of course, but this is, in fact, historically based. This was a furor of the initial May Day, which ultimately ended in a massacre of or a massive attack on workers in Chicago. The May Day became a national holiday at that time, and around the first May Day, national walkouts all over the country. Chicago had become the epicenter of the struggle around the 8-hour day led by anarchists. And it was in Chicago that the celebrations and protests and movement around the 8-hour day took on a very militant fervor. Well, the gathering in Chicago ultimately was attacked by the police. There eventually a number of activists there in Chicago, like Albert Parsons, were eventually convicted and hanged for their activities around the whole May Day issue and the struggle around the 8-hour day. Now, you know, we can talk a lot about the specifics of that, but I think the important point, or the thing that I always remember about May Day, is that its history is a history of struggle. Its history is one of people addressing in a militant way this holiday. So I think in that context, we have a lot to talk about this evening. We have a lot of very serious issues that are on the table that we're facing. And fortunately, we have an opportunity to do that through this station. We'll be talking with Michael Franklin and Marian Ochoa, both in Baltimore, very involved in the struggle that's going on there right now in a number of different aspects. I haven't had a chance to talk at length or much at all to Michael, but I did have an opportunity to speak with Marian, and you know, she's very involved in a lot of the support work that's going there. You know, what's going on there. The mainstream media gives us bits and pieces and wants us to see that whole struggle in a certain light. You know, only what is catchy and what can excite people from any number of different perspectives. But there's a lot going on in Baltimore right now. Baltimore is a city with a lot of activity addressing this issue on a number of fronts. So as soon as we get them on the line, we are connected. Okay, well then, Michael, Marian, welcome. So good to have you here with us this evening. Marian, you are an adjunct professor at the Maryland Institute College of Art. Michael, you and I haven't had a chance to speak, so maybe you could kind of give us a little bit about your background, and then what are y'all involved in there right now? What's going on?
Sure, yeah. I actually do some work at the University of Maryland, doing some case management with current trans youth, and also just do some restorative justice, safe schools work in Baltimore City schools. So most of my work is around young people, racial justice, queer trans folks, throughout the city.
And happy to be with you tonight too, John. Thank you for the introduction. I've been involved just mostly protesting and just being present every day. I've been out pretty much Saturday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. I had to take a self-care day on Thursday. And then both Michael and I have actually just ducked into his office to talk to you over here in downtown from the protest that had been marching since this early afternoon in Baltimore.
And first, I would just like to say, obviously, the corporate media showed up in force after there was property destruction. I would like to give props to you and all of the other grassroots activists who have been there for the entire week, but also when the corporate media news vans and helicopters and whatnot and boots on the ground did show up, being able to stay on point with things such as some of the memes I've heard regarding some of the property destruction, quote, I do not have to condone it to understand it. And also another activist I saw on MSNBC saying, well, we've been already been out here for a week and you guys didn't show up until buildings and cars started getting burned. So I would like to give you props for that. The other thing that the corporate media is really highlighting a lot today is obviously there were charges brought against several of the police officers involved in the incident that's kind of kicked things off. Is this a victory in your eyes, or is this merely a step forward, or is this really no progress at all as far as the real issues behind relations of communities that are socioeconomically challenged with the police?
Yeah, so that's a great question. I think it definitely a step in the right direction. And the fact that the decision came so swiftly, I think really meant a lot to the people here in this city, that really, really needed to know that, we were moving towards some sort of justice. Are we there yet? Absolutely not. Not at all. We have to still go through the legal process, and there's a lot that has to go into that, and hopefully actual justice gets served and time gets served. But I'm not too sure that's going to happen, to be honest. But the focus needs to continue on the roles that police are playing in their communities. Obviously, right now, the roles are ones that are antagonizing people, that are hurting people, that are destroying communities. And it's really, really, we just need that to shift. Specifically, making sure that police are not enacting these racist policies that are completely within our system.
Yeah, and to tail end on that, one thing, you were giving props to different people. You said you had this quote, I think it was DeRay McKesson, who has been a fantastic source just on the ground. When I haven't been out there, when I had to go home because, I was too exhausted, I looked to his Twitter feed. And one thing that I think really sets Baltimore apart from other cities that have gone through this, you think of Ferguson having happened so recently, is the social media presence and the kind of dedication that people have to making sure that they own their own narrative. And, I'm a teacher at the Maryland Institute College of Art. I was talking to my class for the half of the day today about how to build a movement and kind of own a narrative about a situation, and the ways that people are contextualizing and sharing information, I think, is just really revolutionary and important to acknowledge. To the announcement of the charges being filed, I think that there were a lot of really validating things that Marilyn Mosby said in her speech that a lot of people that have been on the ground needed to hear. She said statements like, she's heard the protesters calling and saying, no justice, no peace. Let her work on the justice part. And there are a lot of people that were really emboldened by that. I am a fair-skinned person, and I was hugged, just like the biggest hug that I could have received today by this woman standing at North and Pennsylvania Avenue, just saying, like, thank you, they're hearing us. And, and I don't think that anyone needs to thank me for doing, because I feel like it's my responsibility to be there and be present and report and, kind of help with the misinformation. I have connections to Houston. I'm from Galveston, and it's been really important for me to feel like I'm doing enough to make sure that people know what's actually going on.
Yeah, Mary and Michael both, How do you see, I know I have my own views, but I guess just to kind of throw it out there for discussion's sake, is this whole question of how this, the whole idea of charges and were brought so soon, and the role of a militant fight back, rebellion. For so long, all week, or, you know, since the initial demonstration Saturday after the funeral, we constantly heard that, well, this isn't the way to get things done. You know, this we have to do things another way, that this isn't going to accomplish anything. But yet, we do see that something was accomplished, that something was done. And I guess my question to both of you is, do you think that without the militancy, without the image of what could happen, is what really is moving the system along to, you know, make these certain reforms that they feel they have to make in order just to survive?
Yeah, so, you know, I think you spoke a little bit to how quickly the decision was made. And, you know, so I'm born and raised in Baltimore. I've been living here my entire life, went to school elsewhere, came back. The people here, my folks, like, we don't sit still when things are happening to us. And so I think part of the reason why things moved so quickly was really the young people that literally decided this was enough, and decided that we're going to fight back, and we're going to do so hard, and we're going to really make sure that attention is paid in a really specific way to our cities, because you're not invested in us, you're not invested in the places in which we live, and so, you know, we need to show you that you need to be invested. And I really think it was actually the movement of the people in that way, through uprising, through consistent marches and protests. I think that really kind of called on the government to respond much more quickly than they would have otherwise. I think that was huge, and really the young people were our thing for that, to be honest.
Yeah, and I agree, certainly, that the youth and there's all these sort of reports and different narratives, especially the one that the mainstream media is pushing forward about what exactly happened on Monday, and how that was orchestrated or perhaps designed by the police. You know, certainly the police acted as agitators, and, you know, the students were cut off from transit and also told to disperse, and they had been harassed kind of continuously. We've seen different articles, reports, and firsthand experience from teachers that I've been reading as well. But really what I think is so crucial here in Baltimore is that there's been what I'll say is a proper balance of militancy and of community building that's come out of that. We have strong communities in different areas. There's a strong church-based community that I really don't have any affiliation with, but I know that it's there because I see them on the ground. And we have a lot of students in Baltimore that are interested in joining this discussion. And there were a lot of people out there on North and Penn, North and Penn, that's what we've been saying to refer to the intersection. Pennsylvania is too long. But, you know, there were a lot of people out there on Tuesday morning cleaning it and sweeping it up and making sure that everything kind of got put back a little right. And, you know, I was down there today, and I have never seen the streets so clean in that area. But I really, of course, given the great introduction about May Day and this sort of the revolution and this history of struggle, I have to take a radical stance and say that, you know, I haven't seen any revolution come forward without, quote-unquote, violence, or what I would prefer to call the destruction of property. And, you know, so maybe that is necessary in a capitalist society in order to get the attention of the people who are making waves, and in order to make people like Marilyn Mosby hear us.
And with that, if you guys could just hang with us for a few minutes while we take care of a little business. So
we are not a capitalist radio station, but we are on the air in a capitalist world, and in order to stay on the air.
To sow the seeds for revolution. But unfortunately, it doesn't always come free. So we're going to have to Ask for a few.
Yes, we
funds.
Need to beg and ask, please, 713-526-5738. We are dedicating the entire 30-minute show to, well, aside from asking you to please, please pick up the phone or go online and support us, to a really in-depth discussion from people who are living in Baltimore, who are seeing firsthand what's going on with a radical perspective. We're not limiting them to 30-second or one-minute sound bites. We also have given extensive amount of airtime also to various solidarity actions that have happened in Houston around Ferguson, around organizing and raising funds and raising voices right here in Houston when we have had our own instances of police brutality. This is not a Ferguson issue. This is not a Baltimore issue. This is a class issue. And regardless, there was another thing or some things I've read as far as, well, the police are really members of the working class. At the end of the day, regardless of their salary, they are the enforcers of the 1%. Mm-hmm. These are people, and we cannot pretend that these people, regardless of their motivations, when they go through the academy, when they go through the force, that they leave their own racial biases and things at the door, because they very much don't. And we are seeing a number of instances across the country, and we are seeing it now, and it's getting so loud to where the corporate media cannot ignore it. We've never ignored it here at the Houston Indie Media Show. We have always wanted to give a voice and give a venue for these types of issues, and we want to be able to continue to do so. That being said, we need people to log on kpft.org, or we need people to pick up the phones, 713-526-5738 or 713-526-KPFT, in order for us to all do this and continue to do this. This is a really, really important issue, and it is a national issue. And while we are focusing on Baltimore, it doesn't just stop with Baltimore.
Yeah, I think, you know, that question, and maybe at some point Michael and Marion can address it as well, but this whole issue of our community, their community, outsiders from the community, and, you know, that somehow people maybe consciously or unconsciously trying to, and in effect, dividing communities. What happens in Baltimore, and I've only been there two or three times, but I feel that that's my struggle. What happens in Ferguson? What happens in Dallas? What happens in New York? The last thing that we can afford to do is to somehow say, well, you know, I'm not from Baltimore. I don't know anyone in Baltimore, and therefore, I'm not going to, you know, in some way try to build solidarity with those struggles. And we can't afford to let certain forces and people, again, I'm not saying everyone that puts that out there is doing it in a deliberate way that they don't want the movement to grow. But I think that we have to struggle around that question, that no, this isn't an issue that's related to one neighborhood, one city, and one state. What affects us in one area affects us all, directly or indirectly. And because of that is why we spend time talking about these issues. It's why we feel it's important to bring these issues. Here we are in the middle of Fund Drive, and we're devoting a lot of time to this issue because it's important. So again, we just want to urge everyone, you know, call 713-526-5738. We have a lot of premium gifts that our phone volunteers would be more than happy to go over with you and maybe give you an incentive for contributing. KPFT.org. If you don't want to do it today, you can go online, donate, pledge, and designate Houston Indie Media. We've been this show's been on the air now for what, 12, 13 years?
13 years, exactly.
And hopefully we'll be on for another 12 or 13 years, as long as we make our goal. But there is not a voice like this in Houston. No one else is giving the perspective on this that I've heard of locally as to what's going on. No one has taken the, you know, has talked to people like Michael and Marion and tried to put out another perspective that we don't get.
And also just kind of going back to our guest, Michael, one of the other things, obviously, these protests do not happen in a vacuum. This was not the first instance of police misconduct in the city of Baltimore, just much like we have multiple instances here in Houston. For example, we had the African-American man who was shot on the front porch of his home in Bel Air a few years back. Can you maybe highlight some of a few of the other egregious instances that did not get this corporate media spotlight that the current situation is in Baltimore?
Yeah, you know, I mean, it's a constant thing. I know that I believe there was a recent report that said something about there were about 100 or so instances of where the actual city had to pay back folks for police misconduct. And so I can't think of specific instances where things have happened, but I know that the ways in which the police operate in our cities, specifically here in Baltimore and in cities across the country, and the way in which they really target Black communities and target poor communities, and really in a way that is destructive and awful, is absurd. I think I actually want to point to part of the Freddie Gray case, actually, in that he looked at police officers and then ran, and the police had chased him, and so found that actually the blade that he had actually was legal, but still arrested him anyway. And so this is happening, you know, constantly. He should never have been in a van. This is something that happens constantly in our communities around petty crime, and specifically our poor communities that are targeted viciously.
And there's also the issue that is very absent from the corporate media dialogue, in the sense that post 9/11, we have this whole militarization of the police force and all this heavy artillery and heavy firearms with very little, if any, training. That is also contributing not just to the police misconduct, but also the way that they are mistreating and coming down very heavy-handedly on protesters as well.
You know, and before we have to end our discussion this evening, can y'all give folks some place, or how can people get hooked up to support, especially financial? I know there's a large need for legal expenses and other support things.
So I know for legal expenses, so BeMoreUnited.org, actually, so go there. It's actually a collective of about, I think, 12 different folks that are doing organizing here in the city. Leaders for a Beautiful Struggle, CASA de Maryland, Baltimore Block are a few of those folks. And they actually have a fund for bail and for legal assistance for protesters that are getting arrested during this time in Baltimore. So BeMoreUnited.org is definitely a spot to check out.
Yeah, I was actually going to suggest the same things, because one, and this is apropos because friends from Houston of mine have been asking me, you know, I've seen people posting about, you know, soliciting donations online. They don't know these people. They don't know who's organizing. The best thing to do is to find the groups that are already organizing for social justice in the city that you intend to, you know, send financial contributions to. So, of course, just Be More United, Leaders for a Beautiful Struggle. I would add the people that are organizing a lot of the marches are the People's Power Assembly. They've done a lot of really great organizing work around that. And the Black Lawyers for Justice as well, although not a Baltimore organization, is, you know, taking donations as well. I'm looking for a post, but, you know, everything gets so buried. There's also BaltimoreUprising.org for further info, and that's got a lot of just on the ground, like how you can help and what's going on day to day. It's sort of been my conduit for information. And just to speak to an earlier point about people dividing communities or not, without solidarity, movements lose steam. And independent media, like indie media, y'all really help us build solidarity and, you know, keep the word going, keep the momentum going. I saw a video of people in Oakland chanting, "Baltimore, we got your back." And that was a really, like, sort of heartwarming thing. Yeah.
Okay, well, thank you so much, both of you, for being on the air tonight. We want to continue to cover struggles like what's going on in Baltimore as well as across the country and how it relates to us here in Houston. Please, please, as we sign off, 713-526-5738, 713-526-KPFT. I'm Rachel signing off, thanking everyone out there.